Queen was in Balmoral because she wasn't well enough to come to London. We ended up flying to Balmoral and it was a very stormy day. There was various possibilities. The flight wouldn't be able to land.
Liz Truss, recently elected head of the Conservative Party, went to see the Queen.
The rain was driving as we drove in the car towards Balmoral, and Her Late Majesty was clearly very frail, but at the same time, incredibly resolute.
The Queen asked her to form a new government as Prime Minister.
It was a huge honour, and just a... I mean, the whole experience, but particularly that day, was a pinch-me moment of thinking, am I really here? Is this really happening?
As Liz Truss drove away, she could not know that 2 days later, the Queen would pass away here at Balmoral, and that after only 44 days in office, she herself would resign, becoming the shortest-lived Prime Minister in British history. It's a very British tale of blundering, backstabbing, and betrayals.
All right, Sandy Rios with you, and that is the opening to a documentary which is available at the Wall Street Journal, and it's free, by the way. But it's the story of what happened to Liz Truss. You might recall that just a few months ago, we had the privilege of interviewing a former prime minister, Liz Truss. We had a great conversation. And so this is the story, actually, of what happened to her. It's not that long, really. It's like 24 minutes long. And a very well-known documentarian and filmmaker has been contracted to do these series of documentaries, short documentaries for the Wall Street Journal. He's the same filmmaker that produced the full-length film Created Equal, the story of Clarence Thomas, and many, many other movies that used to be on, and probably still are on public television. And so very talented, and joining us today to talk about some of his other projects. I love this stuff. I think you know I'm a movie buff. I'm a history buff. And so this is just a wonderful blend of those. And this conversation with Michael Pack is really a great one. I think you're going to enjoy it. So don't go away. But first, you know, Preborn sponsors this show. And did you also know that they receive no government funding? Their work is entirely dependent upon us, the pro-life community. And of course, that's you and me. Preborn clinics stand strong, offering love and support and compassion to hurting women, helping them to make the right choice. By the way, you are the answer to the dilemma for them. You are the hero of every preborn baby in this nation and an ambassador for eternal life for every mom, dad, and family that walks into a preborn partner clinic. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140, you can do the math, sponsors five ultrasounds. When you become a monthly sponsor, you will receive pictures of the babies that you help save. Isn't that something? When they grow up a little bit, that's how they track these moms. So with your help, Preborn's life-saving work will continue at a greater level as they fight the abortion giants who receive huge government and corporate funding. So this is how we help them do their work, and it's our work too, isn't it? If you'd like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, speaking of Sandy, that's me. And you can call me at 662-821-2040. We've had some really great podcasts lately, and I'm guessing if we had a radio show, we could open the phone lines and there would be a lot of things that you would like to say. Well, short of that, you can call this number, 662-821-2040, and leave a message. The instructions are simple, so leave us a message. I listen to them, and also sometimes I use them on the air. So 662-821-2040. 1-800-273-4040. You can go to sandyrios.com. That's an easy way to listen to the podcast. But of course, our home base is AFR.net, AmericanFamilyRadio.net. You can listen to on Spotify or Amazon or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. You can find us on social media easily, and there's a lot of choices. So you know what you like, and we're on all of those, as far as I know. And so we encourage you to be part of our Sandy Rios 24/7 listening family. And I appreciate so much, honestly, I do, that you care enough about what we're sharing and what we're talking about that you make an effort to listen. And I want to thank you personally for that. Well, today you're in for a treat. At least it's a treat for me. Anything that has to do with movies or films, history, I'm on it. And so Michael Pack, the filmmaker, will join us to talk about his new projects on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Crown Heights torn by violence.
Someone with a gun is on top of a building firing at will.
Three nights of violence in Crown Heights.
The worst anti-Semitic race riot in American history happened in 1991 in the Crown Heights neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York.
A young Hasidic man was stabbed to death.
Black protesters chanting Heil Hitler.
A Hasidic man hit by a brick on Eastern Parkway.
Why did it happen? And why did it go unchecked for 3 days?
It is very dangerous out here tonight.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That is the opening to a documentary produced by Wall Street Journal, but actually produced by our next guest. They have a series called The Open Docs series, and he's the one who does all of those. And you will have heard of Michael Pack because a few years ago he produced and the beautiful documentary and movie, actually it's a film, called Created Equal, which was the biography of Justice Clarence Thomas. It was so gripping, and we talked several times, as I recall, about that because it was such a wonderful product. Michael also has produced a lot of movies for PBS, and he's just a filmmaker of note, and I just love what he does. And he's joining us this morning to talk about his current projects. He's the president of Palladium Pictures, also the former president of Claremont Institute. So good morning, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to speak to you, Sandy.
Okay, Michael, that Crown Heights video, I watched it in its entirety. That was fascinating. And at the top of the show, we played the one that you did about former Prime Minister Liz Truss. I actually just interviewed her recently. Both of them are just gripping. You have a real gift. You really do.
Well, thank you, Sandy. And to your listeners, they can still see the Clarence Thomas film. It's on Amazon and many other places, as you say. It's called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words, or they could find it through our website, palladiumpictures.com, but perhaps Amazon is the easiest. The Wall Street Journal films are available for free from the Wall Street Journal, not behind their paywall, at wsj.com/opiniondocs. So I encourage your listeners to watch. Yeah, we are very happy to do this series with the Wall Street Journal. I mean, it's a great partnership between us, Palladium Pictures, and the Wall Street Journal opinion section. And our goal is to focus on an issue or a story, really, an event from the recent past that has been misunderstood, misreported, and in some cases just sort of memory holds. And so we intend to tell the story in a straightforward, chronological manner, hearing from all sides, you know, we have our point of view, but we have all sides. And so this is the first two of what will be an ongoing series. We'll do, you know, 4 or 5 of them a year every year.
Oh, you know what?
20 to 30 minutes.
Well, and you have a track record of actually telling the truth. I mean, and certainly you won me over with Created Equal, because Justice Thomas and his wife I've known for years, and I lived through that, so I remembered it, and you told the story beautifully. And so, is that your most successful film?
I think so. I've done about 15 that were all on PBS before these short documentaries that were in the Wall Street Journal, and they were all longer documentaries. I guess it was the most successful for lots of reasons, but the others are great, too. We have a documentary about Admiral Rickover, who built the first nuclear power plant and nuclear submarine that went under the North Pole, the Nautilus, and is a hero of the Cold War, underappreciated. But we have documentaries about George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, you know, many other subjects. So I encourage your listeners to look at any of them. They're all on the Manifold Productions website, which is actually manifoldproductions.com.
Okay.
And they all can be streamed. They're usually about history, in the sense the Clarence Thomas film is recent history, some of them are recent history. And I think they're all, I like all of them. It's hard for me to pick. But yeah, the Clarence Thomas film, for lots of reasons, perhaps because of the relentless attacks on Justice Thomas, got a huge amount of attention. And as you say, he's a great American, and lots of people don't really know his story, and it hit at the right moment.
Well, I just would say, as a history buff, which I am, it's getting harder and harder to find true history on video. I mean, I'm actually disappointed in the recent documentaries that you see on PBS and other places. I don't trust them anymore. And I know there are some exceptions, but I just don't trust them. So I think it's really important. ManifoldProductions.com is where you can find these films. And it's important we know the truth about our founders and about these historical dramas, because we see in recent times how recent history is twisted. I've always heard that the most trustworthy history, of course it's in writings, would be those things that were written the closest in time to the actual event. Would you agree with that?
To some extent, I think. I mean, it depends on the event in question. I think it's important for people to get multiple sources of points of view on a topic. I find that conservatives are sort of forced to hear the liberal view because of information dominance and the control of the media, but liberals often do not hear the conservative point of view. And, you know, that is really why it's important to have more conservatives making films, and especially history films. One thing, we talked about this in the past, Sandy, that we're doing at Plague and Pictures, is this incubator program to train young up-and-coming filmmakers that are like right of center or at least non-woke, and teach them how to make documentaries by mentoring them through a documentary of their choice. So we give them a grant of $35,000 to make a short film, but we executive produce it, and we work with them over an entire year make sure the film is good, and then we get it distributed, and all those films are on the Real Clear website. But there's really a shortage of people who can tell history in a straightforward manner that are schooled in that way. So we have this incubator program. I encourage your listeners to apply if they know any young people who want to be filmmakers. I think it's closed now, but it's going to open again for the next year in a month or so, and it's run by my son Thomas, and prejudiced, but I think he does a great job.
You know, it's funny to hear you talk, because you remind me of so many brilliant people I have the privilege of knowing whose minds are so fertile. They go, oh yeah, and there's this. Oh, and then I'm doing this, and then I'm doing this. It's kind of fun. It's really a lot of fun. So, all right. So my understanding is that you just got back from Canada, and you are doing a documentary on something that's very close to my heart, I'll tell you. Michael, I do have an opinion about this. I know you you do, and rightfully so. You want to present just the truth without bias. So it's what happened to the Canadian trucker convoy, the Canadian truckers during the COVID lockdowns. And so I would be Well, you know what? Just if you could bear with me for a second, I want to give people a flashback in time of what actually happened to those guys. And we're going to do that by listening to Justin Trudeau address those truckers. This is clip 12.
If you joined the protests because you're tired of COVID, you now need to understand that you are breaking laws. The consequences are becoming more and more severe. You don't want to end up losing your license, end up with a criminal record, which will impact your job, your livelihood, even your ability to travel internationally, including to the U.S. We've heard your frustration with COVID, with the measures that are there to keep people safe. We've heard you. It's time to go home now.
And so that's just that was a little bit of the ominous threats from the prime minister. There's more. But, Michael, I'm not sure which tack you took on this. So tell us, what were you doing there and how did you go about it?
Well, it's the next one in the series with the Wall Street Journal. We should talk about the first two as well, Sandy, but to stay with the truckers. So like the others, we tell the story. I mean, a lot of people, you obviously are up on all these things, Sandy, so you are way more knowledgeable than our typical audience member, but a lot of people are busy. They kind of know something happened with those Canadian truckers. They don't remember the details. They're not sure. So we tell the whole story. And it's a great story, I think. You know, the truckers, you know, this was, you know, after the vaccine came out, Justin Trudeau, who had been praising the truckers for delivering, you know, needed food and other supplies during COVID, suddenly he imposed vaccine mandates on them if they needed to cross the border. And Canada, I mean, we had, I think, a pretty draconian COVID restrictions, but Canada's were even worse. And the Canadians were really tired of living under those, as even Justin Trudeau alludes to here. So a bunch of truckers who really felt the COVID restrictions were the last straw decided to stage a protest. And trucks were going to drive from all over Canada into Ottawa, the capital, and make their complaints known. And a huge number came, way more than the organizers ever thought possible. And people cheered them from the bridges, and this was in January, so it was like 30 degrees below centigrade or 18 degrees below Fahrenheit, cold. And people came out anyway to cheer the truckers, stood in the cold, waited for hours. And they finally came into Ottawa, and the Trudeau government refused to meet with them. They stayed there for 3 weeks. No one would meet with them. No one would listen to them. And then finally, the clip you showed of Trudeau, he invoked their Emergencies Act, which is the successor to their War Powers Act, which essentially enabled him to declare martial law in order to clear the truckers out of Ottawa. And he cleared the trucks out of Ottawa. He arrested the leadership. He froze the bank accounts of hundreds of people, including people who had only given $10 or $20 to the truckers, and crushed that movement. And we were there last week filming because two of the trucker leaders, Tamara Leash and Chris Barber, were finally sentenced. And the charge for them was mischief, which is a very catch-all term. You know, usually it's getting in the way of someone's use of property. But, you know, usually it's, you know, writing graffiti or some trashing someone's car. And the usual punishment is a fine. But it's very broad, and it can go up to 10 years of jail time. So they were found guilty, and they could go to jail. One of them, Tamara Leash, has already served 49 days in jail for this crime of mischief. So it's really an amazing story. And even though I feel the whole story of COVID, we have a second one on that subject too, even though everyone remembers it, it's going down the memory hole. People don't talk about it. It's not coming up in the Canadian election. It didn't come up in our election. It's really the biggest thing that's happened in the last several years, and people had better remember it, or we will repeat the mistakes we made all over again, which is the reason for studying history in the first place.
You know, Mike, my son lives in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I have to say that from my perspective up there, they didn't dare talk about it. And I think that most Canadians don't really have any idea what the truth is on that. Because everything was really tapped down. They don't have the same freedoms of speech that we do. And they are afraid of their government, which is why, you know, so I don't, I'm, this this documentary takes on even more gravity when you understand that people probably never did really know what happened. And so it's probably true of people here, but I think more people in America probably got it than people in Canada. So did you have any restrictions on your filming, or did you have any kind of, did you, you know, Canada, they watch everything. As you know, they have regulations for everything, and they make, can make life miserable on the details of just trying to function there. So did you have any obstacles, or were you free to film as you saw fit?
It was more or less free. I mean, they don't let you film in the courtroom, period. I will tell you one story, Sandy. So, you know, there's a sort of wave, a little bit, of anti-Americanism in Canada now because of the Trump tariffs. So when we were crossing the border, we drove there from Washington, D.C., and we crossed the border. One of the people in the car, I was driving, and there were three passengers, including crew members. And we get to the border, and, you know, that was the greatest driver anyway, but, you know, there were, like, yellow signs, and it didn't say stop. So I pulled up to the next car ahead of me, and the border guard says, go back, go back. So I pulled back, and I could see already he doesn't like me. And then I pull up again, and he goes, where are you going? And I meant to say Ottawa, but by accident I said Ontario. And he said, well, you're already in Ontario. You should know that we have provinces, like you have states, Ontario is a province. I was saying, I thought, this guy really hates me. He thinks I'm an idiotic American. He thinks, you know, he just hates me. I want to get out of here. So then he asked for our passports, and I hand him the passports. And he goes, well, one of these is expired, as holes punched in it. And this is one of my crew members. He gave him an expired passport. He said, you're not off to a very good start. And I thought, well, you know, this is, where's this going? We're going to have to drive back. I got to film tomorrow. And then he said, so I thought, you know, and I didn't really worry about being that he didn't like me, because I thought he's just going to pass me through. But now I see he doesn't like me. He's going to send me back. So he said, what are you doing? And I said, we're making a documentary. He said, what about? And he said, we're doing about the Canadian trucker convoy. What did you think? And he said, I'm not allowed to express my opinion, but I could tell you that I, like most people, felt their cause was just, maybe not all their tactics were good, and the government overreached. And then he said, you know something? I've decided, I think what you're doing is important. I'm going to pass you through.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, Michael, that's amazing.
He just changed his mind. This guy hated me. I mean, he really hated me. I was sort of his cliche. And then he flipped. And he asked me when it was going to be on and wanted to watch it. He just flipped. I frankly couldn't believe it, Sandy. It was like a miracle. And it's just that there are people for whom those truckers really spoke. This guy, this border guard, he's like a trucker. He's a guy working every day. Right. These people spoke to him. So it's an interesting thing. So I really can't complain about Canadian authorities, since he had every right to send me back, and and he did not.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's really, I mean, I'm glad you told me that story. It reminds me of a different story. This not totally related, but we're talking about Canada and their rules. But I went to Canada to speak in Ottawa when I was president of Concerned Women for America. This is a long time ago. And I was so busy during those years that I actually forgot my passport, which is not like me. I'm really not flaky, but I forgot my passport. So we're going through customs. Customs, I guess I would say. And I think I must have driven. I honestly can't remember. I flew, surely. And so I got there and I just panicked and I said, I don't have my passport. But I said, I am an American. I'm actually the president of Concerned Women for America. Here's my card, you know. And they laughed and then let me through without a passport. And so times have changed. I don't think that would happen now, but that was the way it was way, way, way back. All right, so when will this come out, Michael?
This will come out in the fall. So we'll have to do this all over again in the fall, Sandy. But your listeners can watch the two that are already up on the Wall Street Journal. Let's talk about those two.
I'd love to. And I got to watch in full. I haven't finished the second one, but the Crown, Get the Jew, the Crown Heights Riot Revisited 1991. that was just gripping. So I don't know if you want to tell the story or talk about the... tell the story, because it's amazing to me, especially the appearance of Al Sharpton.
Yes, well, this is another event that people in New York remember it, but people in the rest of the country, if they know about it, have surely forgotten it. But I think it has a lot of lessons for today. So this is the worst anti-Semitic race riot in American history, Crown Heights 1991. It began when, you know, the head rabbi of a Hasidic sect, Rabbi Schneerson, was coming back from visiting and he's a world-famous Jewish leader. He was coming back from visiting the graves of his wife and his predecessor, and because he's so famous, he had a police escort, and the police in front, and he was car number two, and car number three were his assistants. And they went through a light. The first two went through a green light. The third one went through maybe a yellow light, maybe a red light. And sirens were running, though, so he thought he was okay, but he was not. And he crashed into another car, careened off that car, smashed into a pillar, bounced off that pillar, and pinned two young black children, hurting one and killing the other, Gavin Cato, and... that sparked a race riot. They accused him of doing it on purpose, although how you could bounce off all these cars and do it on purpose. And within a few, this was at night, and 8 o'clock at night, and 3 hours later, one of these gangs of black people who were roaming the streets found a Hasidic man that was visiting Crown Heights and said, "There's a Jew, get him, get the Jew," hence our title. And they beat him up, stabbed him, and killed him. He died of his wounds, and that was only day one of the riot. Al Sharpton, as you mentioned, showed up the next day, you know, leading demonstrations, and we interviewed Al Sharpton, and he gives his reasons for what he did and his story, because we want all sides. But the riot went on for three total days. You know, they were terrorizing these Jewish, Hasidic Jewish people. They were scared in their homes. Businesses were trashed. And the mayor and the police chief, first black mayor, first black police chief, I think, did nothing until they themselves were attacked by the rioters. And then they turned to one of the deputy chiefs, Ray Kelly, and told him to end the riot, which he did in a matter of hours. So there's a question of why the riot happened that the documentary looks into, and then why the mayor and the police chief let it go on for these 3 days. And I think part of the answer is that in Democratic-run cities, the leadership has a lot of trouble standing up to violence from the left. We've seen this again and again, including anti-Semitic violence from the left. It's not that the mayor, Mayor Dinkins, was at all anti-Semitic. Obviously, he wasn't. But he didn't want to stand up to Al Sharpton. He thought he politically couldn't do it, and he didn't stand up to it. And we've seen this on college campuses last year, where college presidents can't stand up to violence, including anti-Semitic violence, from the left. No problem from the right. If neo-Nazis were at Columbia or neo-Nazis were in Brooklyn, no problem standing up to them, and that's all to the good. But it's hard from the left, and this was true back in 91, and it's still true today. But it's a very powerful and riveting story, and I encourage your listeners to watch.
Yeah, again, it's called Get the Jew, the Crown Heights Riot, Revisited 1991. Before we leave that one, I want to share with you something, Michael, because when I was on radio in Chicago, Chicago's the third largest radio market. I had a huge audience and a lot of black Chicagoans, and we actually had a wonderful time. And we talked about race a lot and just some great discussions. So I got to know a woman. I'm not going to use her name. Let me just say she was a black female who had graduated from Harvard, and we became friends. And I had her on as a regular guest, like once a month, or when something popped up in the news that was very racially tense. And we would really have very, very honest discussions. That's what I always pledged to them. If I was wrong, I was wrong, but we would talk. So she told me things I didn't know. And one of those things she told me was that the Jews control everything, that they black people hate Jews. She told me this is off the air. She's telling me this, and she said because they I forgot exactly what her reason. was. But there was tremendous animosity. That's the first I'd heard of that, that there was animosity from Black Americans Jews, that they control the media. That was the other thing that she said. Mm-hmm. And you touch on that in your documentary. You touch on that, don't you?
Yes, that's right. There was a wave of this right before. I mean, this comes in waves, period. I mean, Louis Farrakhan, he was very popular in those years, and he is the most famous example. But we have Leonard Jeffries, who was the head of African-American History Department at CUNY, and I think the uncle of Hakeem Jeffries, you know, the current minority leader. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, he would say, white people are ICE people, and Black people are sign people, and they're actually virtually different races. And he particularly did not like the Jews. He thought the Jews controlled everything. And Al Sharpton, later in the film, he gives a eulogy for Gavin Cato, where he talks about, the Jewish diamond merchants and the Jewish control of this and that. And that was very much in the air at that time, and it comes and goes. And I myself am Jewish, and I find it a peculiar and a persistent theme. And you can see it now, Kanye West and others, really. I don't know. Liberal Jews, I'm obviously politically conservative, but, liberal Jews are always shocked about this. They were with the, they were very active in the civil rights movement. They were big supporters of Martin Luther King, to their credit, and I don't understand how this happened, but it has happened, and it's an undercurrent in American political life, and it's not a good one, and it persists.
I just, in thinking about this, after all these years, I just put this together. Remember, Louis Farrakhan is from Chicago, Nation of Islam, and he has tremendous influence in the Black community. Plus, he had influence in, Obama's church, Jeremiah Wright's so-called Christian church, and Louis Farrakhan was a frequent guest and speaker. The Nation of Islam, Louis Farrakhan. So this poison, I'm guessing, might have come from the Nation of Islam leader who happens to be Black, Louis Farrakhan. The blend of a Black culture and hatred of the Jews from someone who comes out of the Islamic tradition. I bet that's a huge problem. I bet that's a huge contributor to what we saw, and probably to my friend at the time, too. Well, that is
it's huge.
Yes, and it's hard to counter, but that might help to unlock a little bit of it. And Al Sharpton should be exposed for his part in that, too. So, all right, the next one, which I haven't finished yet, is the Prime Minister versus the Blob. The Prime Minister versus the Blob. Liz Truss's 44 days in office. We, at the top of the show, played the opening to that just so people could get a taste of your work. But tell us how you went about making that, and just even that video of the Queen, or the still shots of the little diminutive Queen standing with Liz, who's very tall, is just fascinating. Okay, so you tell us what people need to know about that.
Well, this is another one where, Liz Truss was just, as I say in the title, Prime Minister, very briefly, shortest-lived Prime Minister in British history. It caused, her tenure got a lot of coverage, obviously, in the UK, since she was Prime Minister. But here, people don't really remember her, or it came and went quickly. They may remember she was the Prime Minister when the Queen died, but, we wanted to look at what happened and how come she was out so fast. And we have many points of view here. Liz Truss granted us generously a three-hour interview. We have her point of view fully expressed, but also critics within her administration and Labour Party people, too. But she feels, and I think with some justification, that she was done in by the Blob, hence the title, which is their version of the administrative state. Unelected bureaucrats who feel they know better than what the voters or the democratic process produces. They know what's right and wrong. In particular, she was dealing with the Bank of England, who had a different economic policy. She came in and she wanted a pro-growth, Thatcherite economic policy, and the powers that be did not agree with her. And the pound crashed after she simply announced her budget whether there was cause and effect or to what extent it was cause and effect, that's controversial, I think. The Bank of England's actions were also had a lot to do with it, so we detail all that. But at the end of the day, they forced her out. I mean, there's been economic disaster before and since. You know, her successor, Rishi Sunak, he dealt with a lot, you know, equivalent economic problems. He was able to last out his time in office. And, you know, the current prime minister is not doing very well either, but they're not forced out. So how was she forced out? We say in our introduction, it's a tale of the British tale of backstabbings and betrayals. I say it combines the House of Cards aspect of betrayals with yes minister and the sense of the bureaucracy ruling everything. And so it's something really worth looking at. It's very relevant to our time. I mean, Donald Trump and Doge are doing battle right now with our version of the blob. But it's well to remember that this is not only an American problem. It's a problem throughout the West. The people who run these institutions, be it the Bank of England or, you know, in the case of, you know, the USAID or any of the other attack targets of Doge, all come from the same place. They're all educated in the same universities. They have the same ideology. And it's uniformly on the left. So when an elected leader like Donald Trump or Liz Truss has a different view, they have these people, the blob, lined up against them automatically. When a Joe Biden comes into office, it's completely different.
Yeah. Well, that makes me think of France. Marie Le Pen just got sentenced, you know, to 4 years prison, and she's forbidden from running. She's the heir apparent, it seems, to the prime minister. We don't know that for sure, but she's on her way to doing that, and they've removed her. And Romania, you know, Georgescu, they arrested him. He won an election like Liz did, and they have taken him out. The court decided he had to be removed. It's like a disease. Romania, same thing. And so this documentary would have, of course, wider implications for people's understanding. And again, it's called The Prime Minister versus the Blob, Liz Truss's 44 Days in Office. Did you, when you do these video or documentaries like you did with Liz, I know you had conversations with Liz directly. And were you able to get opinions from the other side? How did you do that?
I feel like it's very important to get opinions from the other side. And we promise to give them a full chance to get their views across. I mean, I do not really believe in or like documentaries where they interview the other person and just make the person out to be an idiot or make fun of them. It's so easy to do that if you have a long interview. So I have always tried to give the other side a full chance to speak. So we have a Labour Party person. We have a conservative, former conservative who's anti-Liz. And I think they have a realistic point of view. Al Sharpton, I mean, we let him have his say, even though we don't agree with him necessarily. And I think that's the right way to treat people. And I think that that's why we've been able to get them. And I have to say, the Wall Street Journal has a similar reputation, so having them as partners helps as well. I mean, we did not get, in the Canadian Truckers thing, Justin Trudeau to speak to us. So I don't know what to say. It doesn't always work, but we tried hard, and had we gotten him, he would have had a chance to make his case. Now, we will use clips like the clip you played, and he won't get a chance to make his case. So I think he's making a mistake not being in our film. But we're really committed to that. I mean, I think people need to think about these things in light of the larger debate. And I mean, one of the problems now is really to be informed, you have to listen to right-wing media, which is only on one side, and left-wing media, which is only on one side. And, you know, there's no chance to get a perspective that's sort of either center-left or center-right that's got multiple perspectives. So we try to fill that gap.
Oh, I think that's a wise way to do it. I actually try to do that myself, to watch MSNBC or CNN. I don't do it often because it's hard to take, I have to say. But sometimes I do want to know what they're saying, because I always, if you cannot defend your position, it doesn't mean much. And I don't want to be just hearing one thing. Otherwise, my opinion is not very strong. But this is just a great idea. Michael, so before we say goodbye, What kinds of things are you, what other things are in the works that you're just thinking, bubbling in your head about covering? I think the supply is endless.
The supply is endless. The two additional ones with the Wall Street Journal are we want to do a story on Jay Bhattacharya, who's currently the NIH secretary, but his launching of the Great Barrier to Declaration, and then it's canceling by Twitter and others, which is another COVID story and a free speech story. And we are going to do a documentary on the withdrawal from Afghanistan, a complicated story, you know, with a lot of blame to go around, and we'll try to be fair as we sort that out. But America, you know, even though these things are recent, people really need to hear the whole story put together. And we're trying to do this in 20 to 30 minutes, so not taking too much of people's time. And then we have our next class of incubator fellows, five young filmmakers who are each producing interesting films. And we have our longer films, like the Cornish Thomas film that we're trying to do as well. You know, we are working on one about Thomas Jefferson, which would be appropriate, we hope, in time for the 250th anniversary, and one on the Seattle, on the George Floyd protests in Seattle. And so we have a lot of projects cooking, so we'll have to come back many times to talk to you about them, Sandy.
I would love that. I have one suggestion. I would love to see someone cover what actually happened in Benghazi. That's another story and we have a lot of friends, insiders, who we have more information than most people. And I don't think people have any idea what really happened there. And it's horrible, really. The truth is horrible. There were so many other people wounded, for instance, that were in hospitals for months, if not years, around the D.C. area, had to sign non-disclosure agreements. There's a lot to that story and a lot of guilt. And I think that stuff needs to be exposed. I'd love to see you do that. But these topics are just great, and we look forward to it. Now, let me just retrack. You said Created Equal, which is the Clarence Thomas story of his life, which is, on any count, by any measure, a great movie. It's a great story and a great movie, and you can get it at Amazon. I've probably watched it three times. I think it's time to watch it again. But Created Equal. All right, and the other thing is he mentioned his program for young filmmakers, Incubator Program. Where would they find that?
On our website. There's a button on our website at palladiumpictures.com.
Oh, palladiumpictures.com. Okay, there's a lot to remember here. Okay, I'm writing this so I can repeat it after you're gone. All right, so then the other thing is manifoldproductions.com, and that's where they can see Created Equal there also, correct?
Well, they can find it, but all of our other 15 films are there.
Oh, great. Yeah, and their history. That's right. A lot of history films there. And then the opinion documentaries you're working with Wall Street Journal, which we're talking about specifically today, can be found at wsj.com/opinion docs. wsj.com/opinion docs. And as Michael said, you have to usually subscribe to Wall Street Journal to get their articles, but you could see these without a subscription. So did I leave anything out, Michael?
That's it. It's a lot of info, but yeah, it's all there.
No, it's all good, and I'm just so grateful for what you're doing. So thank you for being our guest and for so much of your time today, Michael Pack. It's been a joy. So thank you. And this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. I don't know about you, but I love Scripture. I love it. I think it's the source of our strength in good times and in bad. It recalibrates our thinking and inspires us, encourages us, and it's life-giving. There's life in those words. And so with that in mind, I want to read to you Isaiah 44:3. It says, "For I will pour water on him who is thirsty, and floods on the dry ground. I will pour my spirit on your descendants, and my blessing on your offspring." This is the theme for this year's Share-a-thon, and American Family Radio, of course, has a share-a-thon every fall and in spring, and I really miss doing the campaign as I used to do on the radio, where we really emphasized what American Family Radio was doing. We talked about the hosts, their ministry, their vision for what they're doing, all the different ministries. American Family Association has done such great work through the years. In fact, the founder, Don Wildman, was a coworker with me when I was in Washington, D.C. We became friends and we caused some trouble together. It was kind of fun and serious at the same time. But now American Family Association is headed by Tim Wildman, who is his son, and Walker Wildman, who is his grandson. And they're both doing a great job. But of course, they can't do what they're doing. And that means bringing truth through the lens of Scripture, through the lens of God's Word. They can't keep doing that without your help. And every year that there's been a share-a-thon that I've been a part of, there's no begging that has to take place because the listeners of American Family Radio give generously. Now, why am I talking about this today? Because my podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, is still part of the American Family Radio family. American Family Radio makes it possible for me to do it. They help financially. They provide, you know, Adam is my engineer. And so the equipment that I use is their equipment, and they support me 100%, which I'm so grateful for. It makes it possible for me to bring you information every day. And of course, there are so many great hosts on American Family Radio. If you're listening to the podcast and you've never listened to American Family Radio, go to AFR.net, and you can find the stations around the country, maybe some that are near you. One unique thing about American Family Radio is they're listener supported. If you would like to support them, and that means you're supporting my podcast and all of the radio shows, that the fine radio programs that they put out. I was just on with Dr. Nurse Mama last week. Dr. Nurse Mama is hosted by Dr. Jessica Peck. She's a pediatric nurse practitioner, a professor, an author, and a mom. She gives great advice. What a great program. I commend that to you. But there are other great programs about that are political. Hers is more about, you know, raising children and some other things like that. Just a ton of wisdom, and I really enjoyed that. But there's great programming on just about any topic that you would like to hear about and information that you can trust. If you would like to help American Family Radio thrive and move on to greater heights, you can pledge some money at 1-877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or go to AFR.net. AFR.net if you'd like to do it online. Most of you are, many of you are part of our American Family Radio family already, but if you're not, and this is new to you, then you might want to check it out and you might want to help them. It's 877-616-2396 or AFR.net.
This is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
When you become a monthly sponsor of Preborn, you will actually get a picture of the babies you help to save. That's pretty good plum, isn't it? But also, you can sponsor what's called a Day of Life. And that's sponsoring an entire day of women, you know, having ultrasounds at these clinics. And it's more money. It's a bigger investment. For a gift of $5,000, you can sponsor an entire day. And so that's why we call it a Day of Life. If you'd like to do that, if you can afford to do that, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
If your truck is being used in these protests, your corporate accounts will be frozen. The insurance on your vehicle will be suspended. The consequences are real, and they will bite. It is time for you to go home. And let me also be clear that we will have zero tolerance for the establishment of new blockades or occupations.
All right, so that was the sweet, kind voice of Chrystia Freeland. She's Canada's finance minister, at least she was during COVID, and that was her really kind warning to truckers that their bank accounts would be frozen, that they would be, you know, all kinds of warnings and threats, really. I'm thinking threats. Of course, I'm sure she's only thinking of their benefit, right? She and Justin Trudeau were only thinking of them, right? Well, not exactly, but that's the sound of domination. That's the sound of authoritarian rule. That's the creepy sound of someone who wants to control your life. And of course, that whole Canadian trucker incident was gripping. We covered it a lot because I was so identified with him, and I was so frustrated that they got such terrible treatment, just angry, really, feeling helpless. And I am absolutely delighted that Michael Pack is working with Wall Street Journal to develop a documentary on what happened there. And so I want to remind you that if you want to see his documentaries, it's easy. Okay, so just take a pencil. If you didn't catch it the first time I said it, it's WSJ, Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com/opinion docs, D-O-C-S, opinion docs, WSJ.com/opinion docs. And that's Michael's working on a series of those. And I'm telling you, they're just really excellent. They are shorter versions of his great movie about Clarence Thomas, Created Equal, which I also commend again to you. If you haven't seen it, go to Amazon. You will not be sorry. You'll be like me. You'll be watching it multiple times. The story is incredible. It would be hard to tell the story badly, but Michael brings his great talents to telling it beautifully. So Created Equal at Amazon. And what was the other thing he talked about, this intern program? You know, a lot of the kids I've come across in the airports and just chatting with kids and like waiters and waitresses in restaurants. I met a young guy in the movie theater who was taking tickets, who is wants to be in the movie industry. He's already made some movies. And so they're everywhere. They really want to do this. And so for conservative, talented young people who want to be in the film industry, this is what Michael's doing. It's incubator. He calls it the incubator program. And you can find that at palladiumproductions.com. I know it's confusing, but Mike is actually the president of Palladium Pictures, and that's why it's got a lot of different monikers. Palladium, that's they used to call theaters in the old days. That was a classic name for the Palladium Theater, but PalladiumPictures.com, PalladiumPictures.com. Did you get all that? I hope so. And if you got this, rewind and listen again and write that down, because this will enrich your lives. It will enrich the lives of your friends, and it will inform us in ways. For instance, that Crown Heights riot, I had no idea until I watched that documentary. I knew vaguely about it, but this is great stuff. And these documentaries on the Wall Street Journal are not long. As I said, Liz Truss's is only 23 minutes, and the one about Crown Heights in 1991 is shorter than that. So it's something you could listen to easily. Again, it's Wall Street, WSJ.com/opinion docs. Well, hey, I am so grateful that you listened today. This was a fun one for me. I hope you enjoyed it. And I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan. They made it possible for me to talk to Michael Pack today. And they teach you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.